This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
All right, what's going on, y'all? Welcome to another episode of Southeastern Bowhunter Podcast. In this episode, we've got Mr. Rob Chalinski from TAC, Total Archery Challenge, on here, and we are going to talk about kind of how TAC became a thing, how it's grown so much, and get to learn a little bit more about Rob. So before we do that, got to run through the partners real quick. Let's see. The podcast is brought to you by Sportsman's Empire, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Osseo Gear, The Boutique, G5 Outdoors, Prime Archery, Dialed Archery, Moultrie, Bow Hunting League, Whitetail Champion, which I'm going to go a little bit in depth on that one. If you guys don't know what Whitetail Champion is, or you didn't listen to last week's episode, God, if only I could talk. Whitetail Champion is this new contest that Ben has come up with that I am actually a part of. I'm not going to be competing, but me and Alex DeBoard are state representatives for Georgia. And what that means is we are tasked with trying to, I guess, get some teams together. And the way that the contest works, right, it's state specific. So you're only competing against people in your own state. So for us Georgia guys, let's say you get a three-man team. It's $150 per person, right? So that's $450 per team. Well, what happens is that money that you pay in order to join the contest is going into a pot. So when you, let's just say that you guys just have a great, great season, right? And y'all win the contest. Well, if you win the contest, if your team wins, you then get 75% of what's in the pot and you split it three ways. If you ask me, I think that is a great, great way to sort of motivate some people. I mean, you know, I know how it is in Georgia. I know I get this way sometimes that, you know, I will, honestly, man, I'll go through season and about halfway through, I'm just kind of burnt out. You know, especially if I've already got one buck on the ground and maybe a couple of does, which that hasn't happened in a long time. But my point is, there's times where I just get so burnt out, right? But having this contest for those of us that maybe struggle a little bit later in the season, it's a motivation. It's a motivation for you to get out when it's cold and go try to kill that big buck. So, you know, I'm not big on competition when it comes down to archery and all that stuff. But when it comes down to this and helping support Ben and the Bow Hunting League and all of that, I just couldn't say no. And it's a great group of people. And I'm really excited to see what happens with this. And I'm excited to see what, you know, what team wins. So that's Whitetail Champion. You want to sign up. It is in the link description. Let's see. All right. Next up, we got Scrape Doctor. Going to be getting my scrape stuff out soon. Victory Archery. I'm running the HLRs. Catalyst Archery. High quality stabilizers at an affordable price. And last but not least, Unbound Archery, the best strings on the market. So that's all the partners. This episode with Rob is going to be a lot of fun. We have been trying to schedule this thing for like 2 months now. So, you know, he finally had some time. I finally had some time and we made it work. So before we get into it with Rob, you guys always know I have to bring up our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. If you guys haven't given your life to him, if you haven't even really given him any time of day, right, or you just aren't thinking about him, the way that the world is going, I really think that, you know, we need Jesus now more than ever, right? A couple of weeks ago, I did an episode with TJ. The whole episode pretty much was us talking about our faith. And, you know, there's good days and bad days, right? Like there's days where I am just on fire for the Lord and nothing can hold me back. And I just feel like I'm on top of a mountain. And then the next day, it's like the old me, my old self tries creeping in, right? And man, it's a struggle, right? Like even Paul, one of, if not the best apostle, had a thorn in his flesh, and he asked God three times, why aren't you taking this from me? And every time God said, my grace is sufficient. And I feel like that's something that, you know, it can be abused in a way, because you know how, you know, us humans are, right? Like we love the easy way out, right? And there's days where I feel like I abuse God's grace, and I personally hate that. But when you read his word, when you get in the word and you get to start your relationship with Jesus, you start to realize that you don't want to keep doing the things that you used to do. The things that are sinful, you know, whatever it might be, it's you realize, you feel a change, right? And I personally have felt that. There's days where, let's just say I make a mistake, right? Say I do something that's sinful that I willingly did it. And then the rest of the day, I'm just thinking, I'm like, man, why did I do that? I'm no better off, you know? And then I go to Jesus, and he's always there. I think that's the point that I'm getting at, is like Jesus Christ is always there to pick you up. He told Peter, you know, Peter asked, how many times should I forgive someone who sinned against me? Seven times? And Jesus goes, no, but I tell you, seven times, 70 times. And what that means is endless forgiveness, right? If like whenever I fall, I go straight to Jesus and I'm like, Lord, I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that. Please forgive me. Help me not do it again. And I'm genuine with that, right? Like I genuinely hate the flesh and what it does and what it makes. I'm not going to say what it makes me do, but what it sort of persuades me to do, right? And it sucks, man. But having Jesus there is the only reason that I'm even able to sit in front of this screen right now and tell you guys this, because without him, I'd be living a life leading straight to death. And I don't mean death of the body. So, man, what Jesus has done for me, the change I've seen in myself, I really can't thank him enough. And I want to see that with you guys too. So that was kind of a long preacher moment. Sorry about that. I know a lot of you guys enjoy it. Give all the glory to God, not me, right? I don't want any of it. But look, man, Rob's waiting on us. So yeah, let's get into it. Rob Chilinski from Total Archery Challenge.
Welcome to the Southeastern Bow Hunter Podcast. This is the Southeastern Bow Hunter Podcast.
All right, y'all. So this has been 3 months in the making. We got Mr. Rob Chilinski.
You got it right somehow.
See, my last name's Chakowski, so I've had 31 years of trying to figure out how to say hard last names. So, dude, yeah. So we've been working on this episode, trying to get you on here and link up and everything for like 2 to 3 months. And thank you for coming on, finally. I know today was a little hectic where I'm like, yeah, I'll be home at this time. Well, actually, it'll be this time. Oh, wait, I got to stop at CVS. Turns out it wasn't even CVS. It was Walgreens. So I went to the wrong place.
And no, thanks for having me, man. This is awesome. Yeah, looking forward to it.
It's been crazy, man. So you're with TAC, Total Archery Challenge.
Yes.
In my opinion, the biggest archery event that has ever existed. I've been to three of them, and they've all been not only exhausting and very challenging, like it's in the name, it's definitely a challenge, but they've been
fun.
They've been so much fun. And the people that show up there and come to these events, like they're some of those coolest people I've ever met. I met a guy last year who was shooting his bow almost, I want to say like backwards. Like he had a regular right-handed sight. He was shooting it left-handed, but his sight was backwards. I mean, like literally,
was he hitting the target?
He was nailing it. And I'm like, I don't even know how you're doing this. So you guys have, in my opinion, changed the archery industry completely. I mean, y'all have given an avenue for archers and bow hunters to go out and just have fun. There's no pressure. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's been a wild ride to see it grow. You know, to go from, you know, this idea that Sean had 14 years ago, like you know, the growth where it's at, because like it, the amount of people from all over the world, every United State showing up and just people having fun. Like I always compare it to like golf. So we're like the par three in golf, where like you guys can just come out and have fun, where instead of like a competitive approach to it, where people are a little more serious.
Yeah. And like I've done one ASA event and it was fun. You know, it was enjoyable. Right. But I'm such a competitive person that when I was there, especially the dude that I was with too, he was even more competitive than me because he was trying to make it. Like he was trying to be like a pro shooter. And I'm like, you could just pay $50 and be a pro shooter, but whatever. If you want to do it the hard way, that's fine. But we went and like, I hadn't even been to TAC yet. We went like a few months before I went to my first one when it was down in Georgia. And
oh yeah, Dahlonega.
Yeah. And to this day, I still say that was the hardest course. I mean, I don't know if the first time you go is your hardest time, but dude, I've been to Tennessee
twice. That red clay, man.
Oh my, I fell up a hill and in a creek with my brand new bow. And then I punched myself in the face too, because I wasn't clipped on correctly. So it was fun.
Double trouble.
Yeah. It was a good time. But dude, so what, I kind of want to know the history of TAC. Like how did this become what it is?
Sure. So Total Archery Challenge, our headquarters is based out of Utah. Mm-hmm. So Sean DeGray, the owner, used to be a shoot up at Snowbird Resort called Bocas at the Bird. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of bought the company, you know, did an asset purchase, I believe, and then had this idea to spread it across the United States. Now, Sean comes from a event background. So he was running like the Color Run across the nation and like some other events. So event-minded person. So he that loved archery. So we're a little different, where we're not just archers who love events. You know?
Yeah.
We wanted to, we're an event company first. So yeah, he just started planting it across different ski resorts and hoping it would pick up some traction. I met him the second year in business, I believe. I went to the Seven Springs event in PA here and shot and said, you got to come back. And I haven't shot since. And it just kept growing and growing. It just took a while for people to come over and hang out with us.
Yeah, dude, I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but the event itself is just so much fun. Like the TAC truck, the courses, the food. I mean, I'll tell you what, this past year, I went.
You're supposed to lose weight when you come to the event.
Oh, I gained it all back. Don't worry. We came up. So I'll kind of give a little bit of background, right? Like we went to Georgia the first time. That was my first. I saw all four seasons that day. It was crazy. I've never seen Georgia do this. And so we show up. I have no idea what to expect. I have a bow that I've only shot maybe for a couple weeks, a brand new dialed Arxos. So that should tell you how long ago it was.
Yeah,
that I didn't know how to sight in, apparently. I thought I did, right? So I show up, and I've got this.
I still don't know how to. I make Scott Everett Dow set it up for me.
Yeah. it's really, like, I learned it now, but we're talking 3 years ago, right? So
sure.
Before that, I was shooting, you know, the maybe $100 Trophy Ridge sight. That it's pretty kind of self-explanatory, right?
Sure.
And had just recently partnered up with Dialed and was really excited about it. And I sighted it in like I thought I was supposed to. We go up to TAC. I've got this, I guess you could say brand new at the time I was shooting an Obsession with orange cams. And this only maybe a year. Let's see, I've been doing the podcast since 22. So if it was, maybe a year, maybe two into podcasting. And, you know, we had some nice guests and like, got to have T-Bone on, Waddell. So in my head, because I'm competitive, I'm like, oh man, I'm going to show up. Got some partners up there. It's going to be great. I got humbled so quick because not only did I show up and nobody knew who I was, my partners barely knew who I was. Thank God the guy that I typically talk to was there, or we wouldn't even have been able to get in the booth. And so we show up to the ski resort in Dahlonega and I didn't know Georgia had that. And I'm seeing all these hills and I'm like, oh, this is going to be tough, you know, because where I'm at my event, it's all flat. Like it's nothing. And so me and my buddy Josh hop out, we leave our bows, we go talk with people, whatever. And we start realizing like, dude, everybody's here. All the big names of like the brands are here. PSE, Prime, Hoyt, Math. Actually, I don't know if Matthews was there.
I don't think that year, but
well, yeah. Either way, it was a shell shock because I've only gone before that time. I'd only gone to one event. Like one show, like a trade show.
Oh, and yeah, that's an eye-opener for you.
Yeah. Oh, dude, we worked it. It was 10 hours of just grinding work. I mean, great podcast episode, first in-person one I ever did, and it was an eye-opener for sure. But that's we go to Georgia. Awesome. We have a great time. I get my butt kicked. I'm sore. I'm chafing, you know, because I'm not in the best shape. My feet hurt, and I'm like, I want to do this again next year. So went to Tennessee. Had a great
Tennessee's dude, rough too, man. That's a butt whooper.
Well, so that's the thing is like we go up there last year and it rained a lot. And that was kind of the only problem. Like, yeah, it was a mud pool, you know, when you go to Vendor Village and everything, but it was so fun. And then this year,
I think Tennessee was the first time that a truck got stuck. The machine pulling the truck out got stuck. And then the bulldozer pulling the tractor that's attached to the truck got stuck. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing about that. And, dude, it was just so fun. So like I told my wife this year, cause she wanted to start getting into bow hunting or not bow hunting, but shooting her bow.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Right.
So I was like, well, why don't you come to TAC? We can film, we can have a good time. And so she came up this year and we did the Jack Lynx course the first year, which that was very difficult. And then last year we did lacrosse. It wasn't that bad. This year we decided to do Jack Lynx. And when we got to that 650-foot elevation change, I immediately regretted it.
but you'd do it again. You know you would. So.
maybe. Yeah, no, I definitely would. I don't know if she would. Because, you know, we don't have that level of mountainous area around where we live. Right. Like,
yeah. And that the long ago was like when I did the site visit there, I was shocked. They're driving me around on their trail system. I'm like, wow, we have just way more terrain here than I expected. And pretty rough terrain for Georgia.
The closer you get to Tennessee and Georgia, the worse the mountains get. I mean, it really is humbling. So we go through the event. I shot the best I've ever shot, which was crazy. I didn't expect that. And then we come back up and it's like 3:30. And we waited in line for an hour and a half for food, and it was well worth it. But after that, Vendor Village was closed, and I'm like, well, tried to come up here and network, but, you know, didn't work. But what you guys are doing, and maybe you've heard this before, but what y'all are doing with TAC is you're kind of bringing people, you know, like myself that love to shoot bows, love to bow hunt, and are doing something in the hunting space where we can actually go and meet people that have been in this for a long time. You know,
absolutely. And that's really, I think it's really helped the event grow and help the brands grow.
Yeah. It gives me like a chance to where I don't have to bug these people over the email or hit them up on Instagram and be like, hey, I like what you do. Can you come on my podcast? I can actually go talk to them and be like, hey, I'm a human being. You're a human being. What's up? And then we talk.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And the amount of people like last year in Pennsylvania, like I'm a huge UFC fan. MMA fan. I'm standing in line getting people to sign waivers. And I just turn my head and look up and I could just see this cauliflower ear. And I'm like, hey, it's Bo Nickel. I'm like, hey, man.
That's crazy, dude.
Hey, how you doing? Like you're saying, they're like just humans. He's just standing in line like everybody else, getting checked in, ready to shoot. It's pretty cool.
When it's like Josh Jones, who I've known for a few years now, I actually got to hang out with him for a little bit last year. Never realized the dude's as tall as a tree. Right?
Yeah, like, I was like, and his hair. His mohawk makes him look 2 foot tall.
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous. And what's funny is I saw him in Colorado, I think either that year or the year before. I didn't know it was him, right? So I'm cruising through with the family and I think we're trying to either find a connecting flight or no. We were going to baggage claim and Josh was leaving. And I saw him across, like, you know how airports have like those little, what are they called? It's kind of like it's not an elevator. It's where you walk, but you don't walk.
The speed walkers.
Yeah. And I see Josh and I'm like, man, ain't no way. And so I text him. I was like, yo, are you at the Colorado airport or at Denver airport right now? He's like, yeah. I was like, dude, I think I just saw you, but I wasn't sure. He's like, how do you not know it's me? I'm like, look, man, I'm not going to be like Josh Jones in an airport, you know? And so we got to hang out and cut it up last year. And it's just what you guys are doing, man. It's just awesome. I mean, that's the only word I can really think of. That's like,
oh, thank you.
It's great. So, man,
the whole team, it takes a team. Yeah. So our whole team's dedicated to it, but it takes all the vendors and the shooters. It's, you know, we only exist because people want to come hang out, and then we can kind of help create this synergy that, you know, Like, you don't know the energy at TAC until you show up at one. And yeah. the fact that you can go talk to an owner of a company or get a little bit of insight behind this or that product, it's awesome. Like Dialed, for example, Scott came up with the idea of Dialed and the site sitting at a TAC event.
Yeah. I remember you telling me that story.
So it's super cool to see how, you know, all that stuff kind of goes full circle and people could come have fun.
I'll tell you this. You guys are doing something right, because my wife, love her to death. She does not care for hunting. I've been trying to get her to shoot a bow for years. And when she came to TAC, we left and I was like, hey, what do you think? Like, would you come back to this? And she was like, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I just don't want to do that course again. I was like, all right. Well,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, we can change that. So if you guys were able to change her mind, man, you guys are doing something. I'm not going to say it's a miracle, but it's miraculous. You know what I'm saying?
So, you know what? The amount of people that show up that have never shot a bow before, or is their first time shooting a bow, first time shooting 3D.
Yeah.
People getting proposing to each other up on the mountain. Friends getting made every event, from just happen to be in a group together to destination events, almost like someone's going to Hawaii instead of coming to TAC. Like, the amount of people that have made this like a staple in the year, it's super humbling to us, but it's super exciting to see.
Well, and it keeps people like me busy, you know, because if I get a new bow, right, and I'm like, all right, TAC's in 2 months, I know what to expect, I've got to shoot this thing, I'm going to shoot it. And then, you know, you get there and you're like, oh crap, I guess I don't know how to shoot a bow because I've lost all my arrows. it's just humbling, and it's good. It makes you want to get better. The funny thing is, like you were saying, you know, meeting people, making friends and whatnot. We had a group, or the group we were in last year, I think we laughed more than we shot our bows. I mean, it was just...
Oh, yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah, it was just a random goofy group. And we saw them again this year. And I don't know if I maybe said something on here that sounded bad or off, or like I was talking crap, but we saw them and they were like, oh yeah, you're the podcast guy. Yeah, I listened to a couple episodes. You were talking crap about being in a group with us. What's up with that? I was like, I don't even remember saying that, dude. I was hoping to see you guys here. And
that's funny.
Yeah, so I kind of got, you know, called out a little bit, but it is.
Well, I mean, you should see some of these guys. They have like their punishments for who loses, who has the lowest score.
Yeah.
And of course, like, and you'll see guys come out in mini skirts, after beard shaving off, like,
nope, I would not agree.
Some of it's pretty creative and pretty funny.
Yeah. So what, you know, when the average guy shows up to an event, he just sees a bunch of vendors and then he has his course and he goes to the course and he sees targets. But like, what goes into setting this up? Like, say, like Tennessee, for example.
So our team's a bunch of rock stars. Like, there's always the backside of stuff. Like, I mean, there's communication with the companies and the resorts that happen essentially year round. But when it comes to the event, those guys can set up an event and have it ready to run in a couple days, 2 to 3 days. And the whole thing's like, for example, like we left Tennessee, there's a little bit of a gap. We get to Vermont. Then it goes back to back weekends, Vermont, Pennsylvania, Boyne, Bristol, Mountain Michigan, South Dakota, Montana. So you have 6 weekends in a row where you're unloading the semi truck, setting the targets up, load them back up on Sunday night, Monday morning leave, drive to the next event and set them up again. So like, these guys, I mean, they're masters of the craft and they just kill it. They're so good.
I bet they're like freaking billy goats, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably in the best shape of anybody.
We always joke about it, because like, we start the year off like, all right, how much weight so-and-so going to lose this year? Or, you know, what type of shape are you in? Because you get down at the first event, then like, you're feeling parts of your body hurt that didn't hurt before, matter how good a shape you think you're in.
Oh, yeah.
And then, because some of those courses, like there's, if anyone that attends the Indiana events listening, they'll know what I'm talking about. But the back half of the knock-on course, there's just this climb that goes and goes and goes. And it takes, you think you're at the top and you still got 50% more to go. And
that was me in Tennessee.
Yeah. And these guys will have targets on their backs, you know, rebar hammers. Yeah. They just billy goat right up there.
You got a bunch of little Cam Haynes on your team. Like, yeah, that's all I can think of is like Cam with, you know, targets just running up a mountain, just clinking it in and then going to the next one.
Yeah. They're good. I mean, they're really good at what they do. And they're also professionals at making sure stuff's set up safely and fun. We always want to make sure we never lose the man, that shot number 9 on the Sitka course was a pain in the butt. You know, do you see how many arrows were stuck in that tree? Like, that's part of the fun here, you know?
Dude, see, that's one thing that I had a conversation with my local DNR guy who actually runs the archery range where we have our event. And I told him, I'm like, do you know what TAC is? And he looked at me, I was like, Total Archery Challenge. And he was like, oh yeah, I've seen a couple videos. I'm like, have you actually watched them? And he's like, yeah, why? I'm like, that's what I want for here. Because I'll tell you what, our local course, it's fun and it's good. And it's really set up for all different types of people. But like when I'm out there or me and my buddies are out there, we'll go. And if you have, there's one target, it's a javelina that's at like 15 yards. I mean, I don't want to sound cocky, but
that's a little easy.
Yeah, that's a little easy. Like I could pick a dot on that thing and probably hit it. And so we'll back up. We'll back up 40, 50 yards and stand behind a tree and be on our knees or something. And then we'll shoot. And it's like, it recreates what you guys do. Because y'all shots, I mean, my favorite shot from this past event in Tennessee was there was a gopher on the Jack Links Trail that I think it was like 63 or 53 yards or something. Shot him in the head. I didn't even think it was going to happen. Yeah, I was like, dude, I'm not going for that. I'll shoot him in the head. And sent it and actually hit it. And I'm like, okay, something's working here today. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, and, I was keep shooting like that the rest of the day. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and he was behind a tree too. And I'm like, dude, this is what I want an event to be like. And I mean, you guys really are like the staple. You know, I know a bunch of guys that will put on events, you know, like our local bow shop does it. They'll try to do the same thing. They'll hide stuff behind trees. Because, you know, when you're out in the woods, it's not a clear and open shot half the time.
Yeah, we want to create, not saying every situation is a shot you're always going to take, you know, while you're hunting, but we want to create that experience. Like, this could happen while you're out there. So can you do it? It's for fun, but it's also for gaining confidence in your equipment. You know, and like sometimes, like I'll tell you a funny story years ago up to Seven Springs event. This is probably pushing back 8 to 10 years, but the prime course, we send the guys from prime up on the mountain first before everybody else so they can shoot the course. Well,
was Brian in the group?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if you made it the whole way through.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was asking. I'm going to text him, be like, hey, so
now you got to talk like this. Him. Hey guys, you know, I'm on Brian. So
Brian's the best, man. Anyway, sorry to cut you off.
But the day before we're setting the course up and it was super foggy. If you couldn't see, and Sean, the owner's up on the hill, and we got this buffalo target, and we're like, we can barely see him. He's going farther. He's just waving his hand. We're like, man, that looks pretty far. It's farther, farther. Good. Like, well, okay, I can barely see him. It's just the fog, you know, we just were off. Well, the G5 guys get up on the mountain, and shot one or two, they text me. Really? 156 yards? We're like, whoo.
Oh my God.
We pushed that one out there a little too far.
Dude. Hey, if you can hit that, you can at least hit the caribou and try to win a truck. I mean, that's crazy.
We're just laughing.
Oh yeah. Well, and I've been telling Brian for like 2 years now, it's like, man, you need to come down to Tennessee for this event. Right. So we can actually hang out and like you can shoot with us and stuff. But they're so busy. I don't even know. I know this year they had the what was it, the prime truck?
They have the trailer that they're building all the bows in the trailer.
I didn't even know. See, that's the thing. Super awesome. Didn't even know they were doing that. Like, I watched someone's video and they went up there. Or no, it was Scott. Scott got his bow. And I was like, wait a minute. That's the same truck that was at the Tennessee event. What are they're building bows in that? So I texted Brian. I'm like, you didn't tell me there was freaking bows being built here. I was like, dude, I could have brought that up on the podcast or something. He's like, oh yeah, well, I thought you knew. It's like, no, dude, I didn't know.
I think that materialized. They had the idea for going for a while, but it took them a minute to get the trailer built, which it's super clean. But yeah, with that technology of that new bow and the way they can customize with this carbon rod, it's so cool to see people just go up and build a bow, you know?
I mean, I don't know if you can see behind me, but I do have one of the Divide 31s, and it is by far, like, I'll shoot every single flagship each year just so I can have a, you know, pretty clear opinion. And still to this day, I'll say that bow is like, for me, perfect. So to see that they're doing that for people.
They're awesome bows. Yeah, they shoot. I mean, I bought, I think
it was the Shift was the first model they came out with back in, had to be like, it was 2010 or earlier, you know, probably. Yeah. Then I actually worked for Prime for a while, like just doing like trade shows and stuff. So like I've shot every Prime bow up through since like day one, and to see how far it's come along since parallel cams to adding the swerve and the riser to these new ones, it's just unbelievable.
So you're a little biased. I gotcha. I am too.
I love all the brands. I love all the brands. They're all my friends.
I'm kidding. But,
I got a Hoyt hanging out there. I got my Prime, you know.
Yeah. Dude, I wanted to bug Brian so bad. I mean, like, are you guys coming out with the 250th anniversary bow? And I didn't just because, you know, I don't want to bug people, right? Like, I know when you and I were trying to set this up, I think I might have sent you probably like four messages in a row. Like, oh, actually this time, or what about this? And like, I eventually stopped because I'm like, dude, I don't want to be that guy that's like, hey, man, please, you know, like, I don't like to do that. And, I'll be honest, I'm a little disappointed. I haven't seen them come out with any anniversary bow or anything like that. So,
yeah, I don't know what their plans were. I don't know if you didn't see this, but at the customization trailer at all the events, mm-hmm. they actually pulled out a bunch of the old school finishes.
Oh, really?
So, like, now you can add like Optifade, like OG Sika pattern to the bow. You could add like the old conifer, like pine needle. Like all the old colors and schemes. So it's pretty cool. It's like some people are getting these new bows, but they're getting some old school finishes on the limbs. It's pretty cool.
I wonder if they did that because they sent a bow for the shoot that we have next week, and it's Black Riser. Brian called it Summit Scar Limbs, but I didn't see that as any sort of, you know.
Yeah, I bet you it's awesome. The old school, the first scar.
Yeah, yeah, it's sick because I've been running Osseo limbs. Last year, I ran the form with Osseo limbs and a gray riser. This year, I'm running a full Osseo bow. And I told Brian, I was like, look, I love my Osseo bows, but honestly, man, next year, I think I'm going to do something different. I'm probably going to go a different
switch
route.
It out.
Just because like it's cool, but I want to have something that's, I don't know. I was thinking green or dark green riser with maybe tan limbs. You know,
oh, I'd be sharp.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like I don't know, but anyway, back to tack. So what? How does somebody like? Okay, so we have different courses, right? Like Jack Links, yep. Knock On. I know Chris B had his course, which I watched that video. It was crazy. Some of those shots. How does that work? I mean, like, how do you get a course?
So, they're harder to come by these days because a lot of the brands don't want to give up their course because it's pretty strong marketing to go, I shot the Prime course, I shot the Prime course, I shot the Sika course. Yeah. Yep. But as they come available, like for Chris, for example, Chris B, like I had an opening in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So I said, hey, would you be interested in a course here? And he says, yeah, of course. Like I'd love to get one, but I want it to be hard. I want it to be ignorant. You know, like, yeah. Ignorant tough.
He wants to make people mad.
Yeah. So like we come up and we hiked it. I hiked the area with a group of guys. We kind of mapped it out, figured it out. And then, you know, at the end of the day, as long as it's meeting his description of what he's looking for, he's good. Like we have our staples. Like in the beginning, it used to be the locals course and the exotic course, I'm forgetting all of them now. Exotics, locals and whatever. But you know,
yeah,
the locals course was meant to be like what, today, this year, a lot of it's the MKC course. It used to be the loophole course for previous years, but that's meant to kind of mimic your local 3D club, but mm-hmm. our twist added to it. Then exotics pushed out a little bit farther. So we have our staples. Like if you shoot a Prime course at any event, you're going to have long distance. It's going to be a long hike. If you're shooting an Army F course, you're going to be seeing a lot of elk targets. But every once in a while, if we have enough space and a brain comes in, they want to add their flair, then we'll customize for them.
That's so sick, man. See, I want to shoot the Prime so bad, but if Jessica's coming with me, I don't want to die. That's the thing.
What, because of her?
yeah, because she loves being outside, but when hiking's involved, it's one of those things, because she's got a bad knee, right?
So, that makes it tough.
Yeah, and so I was like, dude, I really don't want to overwork that knee and make it worse. there might be one year where I'm like, listen, me and Josh are going to go shoot the hardest course they have. I don't think you want to come to this. And if she does, she does. That's great. But I will also be willing to carry you out if I need to.
You know? It's called the number on the back of your scorecard. We give rides all the time.
Oh, really? Oh, dude, yeah. I wish I knew that. This is why I should read things. They hand me the card and I'm like, a scorecard, don't need that. And then,
yeah, we always have that in there because you never know if someone's going to roll an ankle or they hit the after party a little too hard the night before, got dehydrated. You know. So we always have our guys are always on the mountain to make sure you're safe and ready to go.
Wish I would have known that when I face planted up a hill in Georgia.
So the guys were real busy that weekend, I can tell
you. Oh, I'm sure. Like, is that something we might see? Will we maybe see another Georgia event, or are we going to keep it pretty much in Tennessee?
I mean, I'm not going to say there's never a chance for it not to happen again. That year we had to do a switch up for venues because some stuff was getting constructed or maintained at the Tennessee venue. And that happened just to work out great for that year. But yeah, the short answer is we're not quite sure. You know, we might add, we're always looking to expand the tour and, we have our limit of events we kind of want to keep, but if something screams we need to be there, then yeah, we'll get there. We'll check them out.
If I scream loud enough. Got it.
As long as we have the venue, there's a lot of things that come in to pick in the right spot, but as long as the venue can accommodate it, then we're always interested.
Dude, that's so sick. So one of the things at TAC that I've always wanted to see and I haven't yet, and maybe I'm not hitting the right course, it's two things, is a moving target and targets in trees. Do you think that could be something in the future?
Moving target, no. Not on course. Now, as a novelty shot, like that could easily happen with a brand. It's just too many things that could go wrong or maintenance for the mountain team.
Yeah.
And in the tree, the only ones we'll do in the trees is occasionally we'll hang the bat.
Okay. See, that's what I was thinking.
But again, you got to watch sky draws and arc of the arrow. And if you miss, where's that arrow going towards? So
yeah,
we try to keep them grounded as much as we can.
I get that. I mean, we're not shooting deer out of the tree. So that kind of
thing. If it was
sense.
Like one course, if there's one whole course, like a one-off event, then you have some different options. But yeah, with that many, depending on the terrain and how a venue's laid out, would determine how tight those courses are to each other. So you're always looking for the right terrain to keep you safe. And every year there's a few sky draws that happen, shots go flying into outer space. So
I've done that. I did that at Tennessee last year. So I'm part of that group.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. It happens. We try to educate people not to, but it does happen.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing I am curious about, because I thought I knew, maybe I do, but I want to hear from you. So a lot of people break a lot of arrows every year. And every year I call it the arrow bouquet that's up at the front. What is that just kind of like, cause somebody told me one time that if your arrow is there and they pull it, that you get like a free set of arrows or something like that. Is that a thing, or is that up there just as like a, what would you call it? Like a visual thing. Like, oh, this is how many arrows have been broken.
Well, so it's actually kind of like a combination. So in the beginning, we just had that at the range and people just stick arrows in there as they broke it. But as the event kept growing, it's a fun visual. You know, you get to see thousands of arrows shoved into the bucket. But what we do is, I'm going to butcher the name. I butcher it every time. It's like the carbon recycling program, we call it. So in Victory backs that. So for every dozen arrows you pick up off the mountain when you're coming off, whether it's yours or somebody else's you found, and you stick in that bucket, you show us at the registration trailer, and we'll give you a ticket so you're entered to win a dozen arrows arrows. So it's twofold. You have a chance to win something, but you're also helping our team a ton because every arrow you see in that bucket is something that we would be picking up off the mountain that night to try to get back to get cleaned up.
Dang. Do you have to do that every night?
Every event as someone's the last group's on, we send somebody out to walk the course and make sure everybody's off the mountain safely.
Yeah.
And while they're doing that, they're repairing targets, picking up trash, picking up arrows. And so we do that every single day until the end of the event. And then we normally end up doing a walkthrough after the event to make sure everything's covered. Because we want to leave the mountain cleaner than when we showed up.
Dude, you really are employing Billy Goats. That's crazy. I mean, yeah. I guess it makes sense because, like, I could see being like a, let's say I own a resort, right? And you come to me and you're like, hey, we want to have this event. And the event happens. I think nothing of it. I go out there to maybe do some, I don't know, some prep for whatever the resort's really for. And then you find like 2,000 arrows just all over the place.
Yep.
You probably wouldn't be coming back, you know?
Yeah. And that's, it's a huge, and you have to think too, like some of the venues are private, but some of them are 100 years leases from the government, right? So the ski resort might be there, but it's the Forest Service you're actually working with to get onto the property. And you have to do reclamation if it's damaged or trash everywhere. So to be honest, as outdoorsmen ourselves, the whole company, we want that mountain cleaned. We want that resort cleaned. Because you wouldn't believe how much off the ski resorts, once the snow melt happens, how many beer cans and water bottles and skis and gloves and goggles you find when we first get out there. So we try to clean up even after snow melt and while we're there, and then obviously keep everything as clean and tidy as we can.
That's so wild, dude. See, that makes me like you guys even more. That's awesome, dude.
Well, I mean, so, as outdoorsmen, our goal, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to walk through a piece of woods and I may not grab it on the way to my tree stand, but if I'm walking out and I see garbage, I'm going to clean up as much as I can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every time I go home public, I do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially at the parking lot. Like, I'll go up there and being in Georgia, you know, love my Georgian people, but sometimes they like to leave beer cans places. And I wonder, did it fall out of the sky or was this out of a truck? I mean, hey, I'm not anyone to judge, but
you never know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little nerve wracking being in the woods with someone while they're drinking. But if I see it, I'll pick it up. I mean, even at the local range, you'd be surprised. You go in that parking lot and there's cans, water bottles, arrows sometimes.
I mean, sometimes it just people in our event, sometimes it's not intentional. Sometimes people just are different, you know, and don't realize that something fell out of their pocket or they are people just throwing litter out there. But for the most part, everyone that comes to the event does a good job cleaning up. That everyone's respectful. I think most of the shooters want us to come back, so they try to help us as much as we can to
keep things
tidy.
I definitely love what you guys do. I'd hate to see it go away over some idiot that's like, yeah, I'm just going to leave a six pack in the woods. And then for whatever reason, they hide it. And it's like, oh, I want to, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's weird people out there. So you guys have, I noticed it when I was at Tennessee. Do y'all post stuff up about like camping options, right? For people that want to be there the whole weekend. What is there like maybe a discount or something that comes with that as far as the camping or how does all that work?
It will depend on the state and the venue.
Okay.
So like a lot of times, like Tennessee, you can have camping on site. It's a limited amount. Then normally they'll give you some type of promo code or do a tax special to get you in. But like if you're up in some of the venues just don't have camping on site, but they may point you to the local campgrounds nearby. Cause anywhere from Airbnbs to resort lodging to camping to, I mean, there's people that sleep in the bed of their trucks every year. So you never know what you're running into.
I would definitely do that. Cool. Well, I want to get to know more about you, but before we do that, what is the next, I guess, big thing we're going to see from TAC? I mean, personally, can't even think of, would you guys go out of the country? Are we going to see maybe some Canadian spots? Maybe some, I don't even know where else in the country or in the world you could really go. Maybe the Swiss Alps. That would be challenge, you know?
So we actually we're about ready to launch TAC Europe. And actually, you can still find the Instagram page out there.
No way.
So, I can't remember if it was COVID. I can't remember what crushed it, but we were going to hit a couple different countries up and test the waters in Europe. It didn't work out. Now we are, Sean, the owner, Alaska is like his favorite place on earth.
Yeah.
He guides up there. He worked up there, lived up there for a while. So we're this close to, we're trying to get an Alaska event to work because how cool would it be to get up to Alaska, get done shooting and then go bear hunting afterwards. Yeah.
Bro, that would be awesome. Is that why the TAC truck always has a caribou that you shoot at because he loves Alaska so much? Because caribou is my favorite animal. So
no, that's a good question.
I'm just saying.
I don't know if that's how that originated or not.
I would text Sean and be like, hey, so I was on this podcast and he had a question. Because, I mean, to me, it's like, and I, you know, it's kind of annoying because I say it every single year when I go. I'm like, oh, I'm shooting at the caribou for the TAC truck. I never do it. I don't know what it is. Like last year, I actually was going to do it and then we get back too late and everything was pretty much, you know, closing up. So,
yeah, I got so many fun stories about guys shooting at that truck. Like it's the best when you work that booth selling those shots. You get to see someone like there's a lot of killers that come to the event. Like,
yeah,
coming from the early years where that truck shop was like 150 yards and you had to hit like a bingo dot. And if you hit it inside out, you automatically won the truck.
150 yards.
Yeah. And you know, there'd be guys just aiming up the top of trees at the top of a slope. Or if you hit the target, it was an accomplishment. Yeah. Then we bumped it into 111. And then, you know, if you hit the target, still people would be excited. But now there's people holding 3-inch groups around that 12 ring. It's unbelievable. You
know? I mean, I saw Chris B. I think he got at least 2 or 3 arrows in the 10 ring with like a pawn shop bow.
Yeah.
And granted, yep, Chris B is like an anomaly. I mean, he's one of the best archers in the world, but it's like, I see that and it's like, dude, I just want to try. Cause the thing is, you know, now that I understand how to actually sight my dialed in, that proof makes it so much easier. And it does. I've got the build, you know, that I can get out that far. It's like, dude, I would be willing to spend 60 because I'd probably only do like 3 shots, right? Because isn't it like $15 per shot?
15 a shot or 11 for what for 150? Yeah.
Oh. 11 for 150.
Yeah. So it's, $100. So you pay for 10 shots and you get an 11th free.
Oh, I didn't, dude. Okay.
Yeah. So you paid 150, then you end up getting 11 shots instead of 10. So you get your little extra bonus and it's unbelievable. You'll watch people, you'll see them, they'll hit, then they'll start finding their spot where they're holding and the arrow's walking in.
Yeah.
And then it's like that 11th shot is like, you know, it drives home.
All right, Rob, you're my witness. All right, and I want you to hold me to this. Next year at Tennessee, I'm going to have $100 in my pocket. And I'm going to walk up and say, give me 11 shots.
All right, what I'm going to do is I normally don't travel to Tennessee. I guess I'm coming to Tennessee to drag you up to the line. So
yeah, thanks for the pressure. You're going to text me and be like, hey, bro, where are you at? And it's like, what do you mean? You said you were going to shoot last year. Remember? Come on, let's go.
Let's do it. Let's see it happen. I mean, years ago, there was this father and son. The son was probably like 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
And his dad had a early 90s Hoyt, like no let off or very little let off, no cams, just little wheels.
Good Lord.
XX75 Easton aluminum arrows, you know. And his stance was, everything was wrong. His legs were spread out like 6 foot wide. Like he's standing like a triangle. He's pulling that bow back and he's just shaking because he can barely hold it.
Yeah.
Man, out of those 11 shots, he hit that thing 3 times.
Oh my Lord. Yeah. The Lord wanted him to have that truck.
Yeah. It was so wild. And like his kid, they're screaming like they hit the power ball. It was so much fun to watch. It taught me a lesson. Like don't judge a book by its cover there. Like this guy, he has outdated equipment to everybody around him, but he knows it. He knew how to shoot it, you know?
Great. So like, how does that work? So say I go up there, I get it in and now I'm in the drawing. What should I expect then after that?
So after you're done celebrating and telling everybody that you got in there,
take a picture, take a video.
We're all giving high fives at the bottom. But what you do is you fill out a raffle ticket with your name and phone number. And then at the end of the tour, we try to do something different every year because it's all luck of the draw.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hit that shot one time or if you hit it 10 times, you either have one ticket on it or 10 tickets, you know, on a wheel. Like last year we had a pie chart wheel that we printed off, just randomized a spreadsheet and had a number associated to each person's name and spun the wheel. And we had someone from Bear Archery actually shoot the truck shot and hit the wheel and whatever number he hit won. And it took 2 shots because we had to like, it hit multiple lines because there were so many people entered.
Yeah.
And then it whittled it down to the guy who won. It's forget his name off the top of my head. But the kid that won it this year, I think he only had one arrow in, or last year. Yeah.
Wow.
One or 2 shots in there. So it's pretty cool.
Do you guys like drive it to them? Do they come to you? I mean, how does it all culminate? Like, how does it from start to finish? Obviously, you said the start, you said how people get drawn, but say I won.
Yeah.
Then what?
So what we start doing the last 2 years is from the last event, Bear Archery will actually, or whoever the sponsor is, in this case, it's been Bear. It's been a longstanding sponsor of the truck and great partner of ours. But they take the truck back to their headquarters.
Okay.
You fly in, you get a tour of the Bear facility. I think they give you a bow, and then they sign the truck over to you, and then you're on your way.
That's crazy.
So it's a whole fun experience.
Is there any like tax thing that you've got to go through? I don't know. That's why I'm asking. Cause like,
yeah. So you have to pay sales tax, I believe is what it comes down to. So a couple thousand there, but there's in some places, states are different. You know, where it gets transferred from to where he bought it. Like one guy won it in Canada. He was from Canada years ago.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even drive the truck over the border because it was modified because it had a lift kit on it and some other stuff. So like we essentially had to like buy the truck back off of him in so many words. Canada had some weird rules. Don't quote me exactly, but I think it was because of the modifications to the vehicle that it couldn't go over to the country line.
I love Canada for the animals. I love Canada for Nickelback. But other than that, they drive me crazy.
Yeah.
That's so dumb.
There's always some nuances, but for the most part, you win the truck. Yeah, you got some taxes involved, but you're getting yourself a
brand new truck.
It might be the biggest prize in all of archery, you know, as far as by the time you add up the value of everything that's coming with it, it's pretty wild.
That's so sick, dude. I just have never really known. I always assumed, because, you know, when you see the giveaway stuff or like win this free thing and then you hear people talk about it, it's like, yeah, I won that, but then I had to pay 20 grand and, you know, whatever. And it's like, what's the truth, right? Because I've never won anything.
Yeah, I won't win anything either.
Yeah. Like, I've never been that guy that's like getting the calls and someone's, you know, saying, hey, your name popped up in this and you win that. So... But hey, you know, maybe the truck's going to be the first time. I don't know.
Hey,
if I can even hit
AJ,
it.
AJ, who won it years ago, he's, I'm going to butcher his name, Kazmarak, I believe is how you say it.
Oh, with Lone Wolf?
Yeah.
So okay.
When AJ was out of money and is broke, his buddy, I don't want to give him too much. He's going to start peacocking his chest off. He knows we're talking about him. So
he will probably hear this.
He will.
Yeah.
So AJ, his buddy gave him $15, like bought him the shot, takes one shot, hits it, hits the truck. We did a luck of the draw shot. AJ's tickets won this punch and he wins the truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's only crazy. One shot, a borrowed $15. And coolest thing ever. And probably one of the greatest truck winners ever because his energy level and where he's running around everywhere now.
Yeah.
Kind of stemming from that experience is pretty cool.
I'll see AJ next month. So when I see him, I'll be like, dude, I was talking with Rob. I didn't know you did all this. Tell me how you did it. I don't have to spend $100. That's so crazy, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
That's awesome. That's what I love about tech is everybody is involved. You know, like you hear stories about, you know, like AJ and the story I was telling about Josh and Brian. Yeah. It's just it's a community thing, you know? And like
it is.
It really goes to show what the archery community is. Now, don't get me wrong. I've made a couple of jokes about the Tac Bros here on the podcast. Okay. I just have.
But oh, you're good.
It's, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. You know,
I'm the dress code, man.
Yeah. You have to wear Sitka. You have to shoot a Matthews and you just have to fit the bill. And it's like, you really don't.
But it's changing. It's evolving. It's in the beginning. I mean, you saw more and more of that. And to us, we just think it's hilarious. We think it's awesome. Yeah. You know? And then
started the new trend.
And then, you know, you get these newer companies coming in, and like a pretty cool stat is like roughly 30% of the shooters at each event are first time tax shooters.
Oh, wow.
So you're touching a ton of new faces and new people all the time. So you're constantly getting new integration of people coming through.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool to see.
That's wild. I mean, one of my favorite things is like, when we were walking around and stuff and you see, you know, people that you know are like Westies, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a huge mule deer guy. So I've been out to Colorado. I've seen muleys. I was going to go hunt. Actually, this is the first time I've talked about it on here since I found out. I was supposed to go to Colorado next year. And then out. Well, I found out they don't have OTC for muleys anymore, for non-residents.
Oh.
So I was like, I texted my uncle because he was planning all this stuff. I was like, hey, so were you still planning on doing this? And he's like, yeah, why? I was like, it's not going to work. I was like, me and Derek can't go. So
that stinks.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. I'm thinking maybe all right, listen to this. So swing in Colorado financially was already going to be a little bit of a struggle. You know, because it is expensive. And so I text him this stuff and I was like, yeah, man, if you guys want to come to Wisconsin, I've got 100 acres up there we could go hunt. And he was like, yeah, I don't know. I was thinking maybe we hard turn to Alaska. I was like, all right, Uncle David, hold on a minute. Like,
are you funding this too?
Yeah. I was like, are you paying this? Because have you looked at caribou prices lately? It's ridiculous. I was like, you want to do DIY? Fine. But we still need a guide. At least I'm pretty sure you need. I'm not going up there with only a bow and having a 1,200 pound grizzly bear chase me down. Right.
Yep.
So I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, I've always wanted to go to Alaska. Caribou's definitely like number one on the list, but.
Oh, such a cool animal. Yeah.
Oh, dude. I'm telling you. When I was a little kid, I used to watch like the Discovery Channel documentaries, you know, where David Attenborough
is
like the most beautiful deer species on the planet. And I'm just like, I want to kill one. And I don't know. I'm getting hyped up about caribou now.
That's like, awesome. I've never hunted farther west than Ohio. I'm from Pennsylvania.
Really?
The opportunities are there.
Yeah.
To go out west and chase them and hunt them. I just, four kids at home. I'd rather give them my time first before I start traveling west to hunt.
Lord have, I got one and that's enough for me. You're super dad. That's crazy.
My son's my oldest. He's 16 and my girls, three girls. But my son's my hunting partner. And actually now everyone's rubbing it in my face that he's shooting all the bigger bucks now. So
yeah. See, I'm happy that my daughter's not really that into it. That way I can be the only one.
Yeah. That's
killing. I've made the joke so many times especially with Jessica getting into archery. And I'm like, if you kill a bigger buck than me, I'm going to be happy. But we might have to have some words here because you know how much time and effort I put into this.
There's going to have to be some counseling after this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you're going to have to give me a couple weeks off or something because I'm going to have to go out there and one up you. But so, all right, I want to get into you, right? Who is Rob Chilinski? How did you get to be where you're at? How did you get into hunting? And I mean, what's like your version of your hunting lifestyle, I guess?
Sure. I taught myself how to archery hunt when I was 12.
Oh, wow.
So I had no one in the family. I mean, they had a bow, some of my dad and some uncles and stuff, but none of them were, I mean, they'd shoot once or twice a year, maybe.
Yeah.
And I'd go out in Pennsylvania, I'm sure you've heard, but Pennsylvania has like the most per capita hunters, like, you know.
Oh, yeah. Most bow hunters in the country.
it's insanity. So you go out for rifle season, and I just remember seeing people and gunshots, and I said, this ain't for me.
Yeah.
So I said, Dad, I want a bow for Christmas, and he scraped by. We didn't grow up very privileged. Privilege of love, not privilege of money, you know. And he got me a bow, and I just start teaching myself how to shoot. And that's when I got obsessed with it. I've actually never shot a deer with a gun. So I'm 42. I shot my first deer when I was 16. So everything's been with a bow because I just got obsessed, just totally obsessed with trying to get close and kill him with a bow. I'm not some accomplished hunter. I've killed some good ones.
You got some elk antlers behind you and some nice deer antlers next to you.
I can't take credit for those. The deer I can. You can probably see a bottom of a mount there, but
yeah.
See if we can there we go. We got a couple decent ones around.
Okay. Decent. Rob, come on now. That's a beautiful buck, dude. What are you talking about? Decent. In Georgia, that's like a cover of GON magazine deer. That's crazy.
That one was a cool buck. That was my first late season archery deer. I hunted him for 2 years and killed him January 6th, I believe it was. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
In Pennsylvania?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like 10 degrees that day. It was a fun one.
Oh, my Lord.
But I don't quite hunt like Lee, Alice, and all them guys, but like I grew up in suburban areas. So like I don't know if I've ever shot a deer where I haven't heard someone cutting grass or singing happy birthday or backfiring. Yes.
Dude, those suburban deer, I mean, because I look up to Lee and those guys. Like, I'm buddies with Jay Maxwell and have gotten a lot of advice from him. And I look up to him as, you know, it's a different style of hunting. Don't get me wrong. The thought of being out in the middle of nowhere chasing like a muley or an elk or caribou is awesome. But when I think about like the same thing you just said, a lot of the deer I've killed have been in people's backyards.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, yes, I've hunted public. I haven't killed a deer on public yet because it's, I mean, it's totally different, you know, but man, there's something different about it.
I have nothing but respect for the guys that go up on the public land and can just absolutely crush it. I'm too lazy for it. I just don't have the time.
Same.
I mean, if you take kids away, I have some time, but I just don't have the time to put in that type of effort. And I'm spoiled, right? I plant, we have 20 acres our family owns right over the hill, and we put our food plots in, and you see 30 deer a day.
Yeah.
So it's just fun. You sit there and watch.
Yeah, why go make it hard on yourself?
I don't kill a lot, but it's just fun to watch.
Yeah, when I had Cody DeQuisto on here a couple weeks ago, and like, you know how Cody is. He just grinds it out. And I'm sitting here like, you know, I've done that maybe once or twice on public. Everything else, it's, you know, Georgia can bait, so I've got food out. I hunt small properties, and Cody's naming all this stuff off, and I was like, yeah, so on my 7-acre property, Cody, what do you think? And he just looked at me and was like, bro, I don't really know. And I'm like, understandable. But
yeah, I mean, you never know. Like, I've had lawnmowers, riding lawnmowers mess up my hunt. Then I've had them help me too.
That buck behind me, no joke, I could hear my wife's grandfather cutting his grass when I shot him.
And yeah, that's what, like, I'm saying.
This is totally different. But what's crazy is where that deer was killed. If you look at the map, so you see their house, and it is technically in the middle of nowhere. Their property butts up to like hundreds of acres of just timber property.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is big woods, but I only have 7 acres of permission that I can hunt it. So
yeah. So you're still narrowed down pretty skinny.
Yeah, I'm on the fringes of it. Like, there's deer in those woods I've never even seen before. Yet
that's
I'm trying my best. Yeah. Well, and it's cool because, like, you know, a couple days ago I had a picture pop up over there of this buck that I think it's one from last year, but it's definitely the biggest deer I've ever had over there. And it's just crazy because it's like, where, to me, it's the mystery of it, you know, like, they're obviously coming from those woods, but where, how far, you know?
It's kind of, there's a big part of me that wants to stop running cameras completely. Because I miss the old days of just not knowing what was going to walk by and excite you. Yeah, so like, part of me wants to take them down. Another part of me is like, you're also addicted to seeing photos pop up. But like you're saying, though, to have something that's come around, like deer that you've never seen, it's fun to, like, oh my gosh, look at the size of that thing.
I mean, dude, the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life on the hoof, on a camera, whatever, was on public. And I wasn't running cameras. Actually, God, was I running cameras then? I might have had one camera out, but it was 106, at least 160 inch clean, typical 10.
Oh, that's beautiful.
In Georgia, that's rare. And I've told the story on here 1,000 times, but I'll tell you. I go in there and I'm second year hunting. All right. I've only been hunting for 7 years, right? So in 2021, I go out on public. The whole morning was kind of botched. It was me and one of my buddies going. And, dude, I get in this tree and I'm barely holding on because I don't really know how to use a climber that well, right? No, I don't even think I had a safety. No, I think I did have my harness, but either way, the sun comes up and I hit the bleak can and a couple tending grunts. And all I'd seen for maybe 15 minutes was squirrels just chasing each other, right? So,
oh yeah,
I'm facing at the time because I didn't think about it. I'm facing this field and I'm in like this little funnel, like the strip of woods that's connected to two different bigger patches and maybe 250 yards from the truck, right? Like, I'm not that far in. And so I'm up in this tree. I see all these squirrels running around. I'm facing the field thinking, okay, deer like fields. That's where they're going to come from. So I don't know, 20 minutes after I hit the calls, I hear this twig snap behind me and I'm thinking it's a squirrel. Right.
Of course. Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh my gosh. So I turn around. Dude, that deer was 10 yards behind the tree and had no idea that I was there.
Probably scared the crap out of you too.
Oh, he scared me. I scared him. And he sees me and I just literally whip around and I look right at him. I was like, oh my, in my head, I'm like, oh my God, that's the biggest deer I've ever seen. Well, he turns around, runs off maybe 20 yards where he's at. I can't spin around to shoot. And I'm not really, at the time, I wasn't really that good at 30 yards. 20 and in sure. is like my thing.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, so I had to watch that deer run off. And I might have gotten a picture of him later in the year, but there's something about public land. I don't run cameras on public anymore because of that. And I also had a few get stolen. But
yeah, that happens. Know,
but it's the thing. It's like you said, you know, you don't know what's out there. I mean, you have an idea, but you really don't know. You can't. I feel like when you don't run cameras on public, you're really, really going back to your woodsmanship side where
yep.
you look for sign, you look for feed trees, you look for funnels and trails and all this other stuff. But now I'm learning that those mature bucks don't even use the same trails as the does. So it's like, now what? You know, it's almost like we're back to square one. So
yeah, that's like I said, there's a lot way better hunters out there than myself, but I've noticed more and more like just getting lazier with it. So like part of me wants to be like, I'm just going to take some of this technology away and just go have fun. Yeah.
Look, man, you have four kids. It's okay. It's perfectly fine to, you know, not run cameras.
But just a lot of, they eat a lot. So, you know,
yeah,
I think we butchered like a dozen deer last year, you know, between the family and giving them away to, giving meat away to other families.
Good Lord, Rob.
We pretty much have unlimited doe tags where we are. So I just tell my son, hey, another family needs a deer, go shoot it. And then, yeah, we'll process it in the butcher shack and go drop it off. So it's fun. We keep the numbers down, but you also get to give back to the community.
That's so wild. So is Pennsylvania known for like big deer?
Yes, no. There's a ton of giant deer. The deer management process changed 20 years ago big time, where it used to be no antler restriction, was shoot what you want to. Then they changed it to where you had to have certain units of certain amount of points being up. They got like a 3-up or a 4-up rule. And once they started doing that, and there was a huge amount of feedback between the traditional hunters were against antler management, deer management, guys wanting to shoot big bucks were all for it. And now it's kind of evolved to the point where, I mean, guys are, I mean, you don't see people going, oh, look, it's no longer, here's the half rack spike. Now it's, oh, here's a 120 inch 8-point I killed. He's not bad, you know.
He's not bad, dude.
But there's some giants.
Okay. A 120 is like trophy to me.
that's
crazy.
Any animal you take of a bow should be a trophy. And that's, true. I tell a lot of people, especially younger guys, they're getting into the sport or I meet at the TAC events. Showing you pictures like he's not that big. I'm like, brother,
yeah,
you killed it with a bow and arrow. Don't lose focus on that. You pulled back a bow, you got within distance of him, her, him, whatever, you know, and you made the shot. Like, don't lose that focus, man. You accomplished something pretty amazing.
Dude, I'm so glad you said that, because like I had that epiphany last year. I spent 2 years hunting a giant 6-point and almost killed him twice. And it just never happened, right?
Just
and
then didn't materialize. Yeah.
Do what?
I say it didn't materialize.
It's I mean, he did, but I didn't, apparently. So, that was kind of a kick in the teeth. And then, like, last year, man, I had a property that I had 8 different shooter bucks on it. It was my first full-time hunting that property. And they all disappeared. And I got to the point, like, I don't know if you can, you probably can't see them, but there, I shot a spike. Right, first spike I've ever shot. I went 3 years without
killing
a buck, and before I made the decision to do that, because you know I pray in the stand all the time, right? Like I'm super open
absolutely
about my faith, and I remember being in the stand, and I was like, Lord, whatever you send, you know, I know I've got these big mature bucks over here, and I've got, you know, I think there was a 10-point that probably would have gone 130. There's another 8 that probably would have hit mid 130s, you know, just something bigger than what I've shot. And I was like, but I don't really care anymore. I was like, I would really like to be able to shoot a buck.
Yeah,
absolutely. November 1st. So I'm thinking, rut. I'm going to call these guys in, whatever. So I can, once again, get that old bleak can, man, and just meh. And this little dinky guy, who was 2 years old, surprisingly, and I only know that from the neighbor, They named him Wolverine. He's a.
That's funny.
I'll see if I can turn it right there.
Oh, I see Wolverine.
Dud, right?
He's awesome.
And he comes running up the hill, and I was like, I chuckled, and I looked up. I was like, I did say I'll shoot anything. And so he comes in. I shot him. I got more excited over that buck than I did the one over here. And it was crazy because I actually, for the first time in my entire hunting career, got to see a buck that I shot fall and die. And
yeah, and that's an accomplishment. You know, everybody has their different definition of what their goal is for hunting, and I'm all for it. You know, you set your personal goal and go after it. But man, you stuck an arrow, sent an arrow through a deer and it expired in front of you. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, and like the crazy part to it, you know, why I think God was like, hey, you're going to go this long without a buck and then shoot this little tiny thing is when I shot him, the first thought I had, because I had shot a doe earlier in the season, bad shot, lost her. The previous season, my last sit, I shot a doe. I thought it was a good shot, but I couldn't find her. And so I end the season that way and I start the season that way. So I'm like, I remember shooting that buck and I saw him run off and everything looked good. And I just squatted down. I was on the phone with one of my buddies. I was like, dude, I just really hope I find this deer, you know? And he hung up and I prayed again. I was like, Jesus, let me find this deer. I don't know. If I don't find this buck, I don't know if I'm going to do this again.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? It's just one of those
moments. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kid you not, man, I prayed that prayer and I looked to my left because I hear some noise and I can see him just over on this small little ridge and he's kind of swaying back and forth. And then he falls over. And then he
hits. That's the coolest.
Yeah. And then I hear like a tiny little, you know, a small, very faint grunt and he stops moving. And I'm just like, I started crying. Like, no joke. Yeah. I started crying. And I'm like,
it's emotional. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I almost fell out of the tree stand because I was so hyped up. And that was the day that I realized, like, do I want to kill a big deer? Of course. But am I going to look at a basket rack 8 or something that I think is cool and be like, no, I'm not going to shoot him. No, I'm not going to do that. You know? And it's the same thing with other people.
I go with a teeter-totter effect.
Yeah.
You know, and like, if I get obsessed with a deer, my wife will tell you, but you know, it's game on. I'm obsessed and I'm going to do whatever I can.
Why do you think I have this podcast?
Yeah,
that's exactly why.
Like the buck I kind of showed you, like I got obsessed because, I don't know if you can see it here, but he has a drop pine coming off the side face. He has a little drop pine coming down.
Yeah, yeah.
And the year before, he didn't have it, and I chased him. I almost shot him twice. The next year, I got a picture of him, and he had the drop pine. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going after this thing, and I killed it. And like, we have a property in Ohio. We have some absolute killer deer on.
Oh, I'm sure. And
some of them I get obsessed with, but there's some one year I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to have some fun. First one that gets my heart pumping, that walks up past the stand is going to get an arrow. Yeah.
The first deer you saw was a 1-inch spike.
Boom. The fun story last year in Ohio? There was a buck, I missed him the year before. I misjudged yardage while he's chasing does in a food plot. And he wasn't giant. I mean, I'm not saying giant in comparison to some of the other deer we had on the property, but
yeah,
he's probably around 130, 135 inch deer out there. And missed him. I was kind of bummed, whatever. At least he's not hurt. Rewind to this past season, he shows up again. And now that obsession bug's starting to kick in.
Yep.
Like, okay, it's redemption time. It was December 28th. My son and I went out to hunt because that deer was coming through the same area. Actually, let me rewind again. I go out late season after him last year for round 2, try to get him with my bow, and he sheds his antlers on camera while I'm hunting him still.
Oh, dude.
So,
I mean, that's cool. You can go grab the sheds, but man, that's...
Actually, never found him. We never found him. Yeah. So he shed. I mean, it's not like he dropped him like in front of the camera. He's just come walking by, and like all of a sudden, he's a fresh half rack. It's like, dang it, you know? So we go back this late season to hunt him again, and it was, I think it was like 20 degrees. It was snowing, rain mix, and it was like 30 mile per hour winds. And I told my son, I said, that buck's going to be here tonight. And I said, you get the first opportunity if you want. If you want to, you go out there. I said, you're going to have to hold tight. It's going to be brutal.
Yeah.
But if you want to take a shot, it's up to you. You go for it. Or if not, dad's going in to get, you know, to do his thing.
If you don't take him, I will.
He goes, He goes, you know, he's just turned 16. He's like, all right, Dad, I'll do it. I'm going out. I mean, brutal conditions. He gets out there and within, I think it was 45 minutes later, I get the phone call. Dad, he's dead. He's dead. You know, he ended up killing him. It was a 137-inch 8-point he got. He was his biggest buck and just absolutely beautiful deer. And it was really cool to see his excitement.
Yeah.
Like he's up in a tree going, oh, I can't climb down. I can't feel my hands. Like, you
know? That's the best, man. And especially in Ohio too. I mean, Ohio the past few years, it's just been, I mean, I've said before, I feel like Ohio is turning into the new Iowa, you know?
There's so many huge deer. A good buddy of mine killed one that was just a fractions of an inch under 200, you know, last year. Just beautiful deer out there.
I demand a recount.
Yeah, so he's like, I just missed it.
Yeah, I don't buy it. No, I think honestly, and I hate to even give him this type of credit, but once the Alexander Buck stuff happened, yeah, I think a lot of people realize, like, oh wait, Ohio still got it. I mean, I know the hole in the horn buck came out of Ohio, and so they can clearly grow crazy deer. I mean, I've seen tons of giants come out of there, but I mean, Lee killed his 212 2 years ago, and it's just, I've been looking at like out of state hunts. Iowa's kind of always been the, you know, maybe one day kind of thing, but it's so hard to get up there. Got permission on 100 acres in Wisconsin. And like that, awesome. Dude, that is, I mean, that's where the Jordan buck came from, you know? And then Ohio starts cranking them out. And I'm like, God, man, Georgia.
I've been hunting Ohio. This would be 26 years now. So I've been hunting it almost my whole hunting life because my uncle owns some property and they just manage it right. It's managed right. The rules are right. Like the trespassing rules help a ton for private property.
Yeah.
Where you still have people walking on. Like it's just managed properly. No rifles, so slug only or in line. Yeah. So like there's some good rules in there that keeps that herd strong.
So have you ever had a 200 on camera?
No.
No, really? What part of no. So where are
Eastern
all
Ohio? Big-
Eastern.
I'm in Eastern Ohio. Our biggest one we've probably seen is in the 80s or around that.
That's big enough.
Then, but a lot of them are like southwest Ohio, southern Ohio.
Okay.
You get into that rural land. Yeah, they just kill some hammers. It's awesome. I had some guys at the Indiana attack event this year. I was just walking out the course, clearing the course.
Yeah.
Start talking, and he's like, I'm like, oh, where are you guys from? Oh, he's like, we're from Ohio. He's real humble, real soft-spoken guy.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm from Ohio. I'm like, oh, I'm in Ohio. What part? He's like, oh, I can't remember the county he gave me. And he's like, oh, you're in Eastern Ohio. He's like, what's considered big out there? I said, well, I mean, my definition of big is definitely going to be different than somebody else's. If we see something in the 50s or above, we're super pumped. You know, like that's a dream deer to chase.
Yeah.
He's like, oh. So what about you? He goes, well, we don't shoot anything under 170. I'm like, well, how often do you shoot one? He goes, I shot this nice one last year. 198 shows me this giant. I'm like, yeah, it's different where you're at.
That's so crazy, man. I mean, I'm originally from Illinois, right? So,
okay, sweet.
Yeah, like Schaumburg area. I think it was south or something from Chicago. And where I told Cody this, but like where I live, there was a game preserve you couldn't hunt. And me and my dad used to go watch the deer in the field all the time. I've seen probably a few 200 inchers just go at it
because there's no pressure. Insane.
They have all the food they need. There's no pressure. And it's a huge change going from that to down here in Georgia where a 200 is like a once in a decade thing. Now, if you're Lee Ellis, that's a little different, but it's just crazy to hear stuff like that and think that, you know, you really could drive 12 hours and go chase a 200 or at least go chase a 180. You know, I mean,
they're there.
I had Cody Idle on yesterday, and we were talking about his new movie that's coming out, about the general. And the deer that we talked about, the whole time I'm just thinking, I'm like, dude, I'll never see something like this. But then I thought about it again.
So
I was like, yeah, well, and it's like we talked about the hole in the horn. It's Ohio. All it is to get an out-of-state tag and go up there. And it's never
know. The adventure's in front of you. You just got to go do it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just crazy, man. So, I don't know. I'm getting more hyped. I mean, I had the realization today's July 1st.
Yeah.
And that means deer season's in. For us, it's in 2 months. And I've been saying for 2 weeks now, I'm going to go hang my stand. And then, of course, God's like, yeah, you know, you're going to have to wait because you got 100-degree weather coming.
And, yes, brutal temps.
Yeah, so I was at work, and I'm like, God, dude, I need to go do this stuff, but I don't want to pass out hanging out of a tree, you know?
Yep, yeah.
So it's crazy, man. But look, man, I appreciate you coming on here. I have to give you more flowers. I know I've been giving you flowers this entire episode, but as a fellow bow hunter that refuses to use a gun, I don't know if you refuse. I refuse. I won't do it.
I'm not anti-gun. I just...
Oh, yeah. I mean, neither am I.
Hold on. Turkey hunting. No, the turkey and the compound bow I have issues with personally. I just cannot connect the dot. I always mess up something. So they get a 12 gauge. Yeah. Okay, I take a shotgun out for the birds.
That's fair. I have to give you the respect that's deserved by... You said you started bow hunting at 12. I mean, I've killed one deer with a gun. You haven't killed any with a gun. All your deer are bows. I mean, that's respect.
Well, thank you. But a lot of it's also due to even where I hunted. Because, like, you know, hunting some of these suburban areas, you just can't pull a rifle out and go hunt after school. Yeah. So it was just, I don't know, you got good with it. And I think there was a span of like 12 years, a buck of a bow every year. And it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And like, all of a sudden, you're like, now you're obsessed. Yeah.
So crazy, man. I love it. I love hearing someone that kind of has it. I don't want to say the same way as me, because I always get every single deer season, man. All my buddies are like, yeah, well, you know, rifle season's in October, so we're going to put the old bow down and grab the boomstick. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not. And they'll get on to me. They're like, man, you know, you'd kill more deer if you shot a gun. I was like, yeah, but it wouldn't be the same. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. I've said it before, but like, when you kill something with a bow, there's a different feeling you get than when you kill it with anything else, you know?
Oh, that's what I got hooked to. I got hooked more to the challenge of just how close can you get. Like, one year, I'm like, I'm not even going to go out of a tree stand. We're just going straight up on the ground, see what we can shoot, you know? And that was fun. Got that out of my system. Not doing that anymore unless I have to.
I was going
to
say, dude.
Excuse me.
I've been hunting out of stands now for... 4 years, since I killed him, and
beautiful buck.
I've tried. I've had chances on public, and all right. So I'll tell you one more story. You tell me if I should have taken this shot. It was opening day. Okay, Georgia, 90 degrees. I walk a mile back on public.
And, yeah, you're slimy.
Oh, it was bad. And I get in this one little oak flat, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, I know that I've seen deer here. I've seen them on camera. I've scouted them and all that. So I'm sitting in this tree, and I don't remember if I just didn't hook the tree stand up correctly or what, or maybe I was just having an off day, but I tried climbing this tree and it didn't feel right. And so I spent about an hour. I just couldn't figure it out for whatever reason. I spent an hour trying to be, you know, quiet. Try to get set up, feel comfortable. I made sure. 15 feet off the ground. And I finally say to hell with it, right? So I get down. I make a ton of noise. I try to, you know, strap everything together, but I couldn't do it. And so my tree stand's literally half hanging together. I've got stand on one side, my bow on the other side, and I'm done. I'm going back to the truck. I'll see the boys when it gets dark. And so I'm about maybe 3/4 of the way back to the truck, and I round this corner, and I'm pissed. I'm like, so
yeah,
mad, right? I'm like, dude, it's like a horrible start to the season.
The mood is set. Yeah.
Yeah. And I round this corner, and there's this doe 40 yards away. And I thought, oh, great. She's going to run off. Right. Cause I'm thinking everything else has gone wrong. Of course I see a deer, and that's just what's going to happen. She didn't even move. In this bright, broad daylight, she does not move. And I go to slowly put the stand down. Makes a ton of noise when I hit it, or when it hits the ground.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
And she's just watching me like, what are you doing, dude? And I get my bow, and I pop the arrow off, knock it, I clip on, and I go to draw back. And then she just kind of flickers her tail and just walks on away. I tried to follow her. And that's when I learned that you can't follow deer in Georgia. So I guess my question is, do you think I should have just maybe tried to take the shot, or with everything else that was bad, did I make the right decision?
I think you made the right decision.
Okay. Okay. There's a closure I needed.
So I have purposely, if I've had a bad season or a bad day, I put the release in the pocket that I can't get to. So I just, beelining out of the woods, because that's happened too many times.
Dude, it was just one of those. And I think that's the same year I actually killed this deer. So it's like, and that was the second week of season. So you start the season off really crappy, and then it's like the best season I've ever had.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things, man. Every time I go scout over there and I walk that same path, I remember that. And I'm like, dude, I was so stupid. I was like, I should have just slowed down and figured everything out. And instead I got mad. So,
yeah. No, those stories happen more often than they don't. So that's what makes it fun, though.
Oh, dude.
Just enjoying time out there.
Yeah. You want to talk about one of the times that I almost gave it all up? Was the second time I saw that buck I hunted for 2 years. I'm not going to go into it. It's a really long story. Let's just say that he showed up at last light, came from the opposite direction, and my bow had touched the ground twice.
Oh.
You can probably figure out what happened. If I've ever wanted to swan dive off of a tree stand, it wasn't. But man, look, thank you for coming on. This episode was a lot of fun. I hate that it took us so long to get it together, but
Thank you. Of course.
You guys at TAC have created a monster, but like the best type of monster that could ever exist. Because you are probably well aware archery is very therapeutic, right?
And 100%.
To take that and make us actually work for it, the challenge side of it, I love it. So kudos to you, kudos to Sean, kudos to everybody at the TAC team for what you guys put on every year. And if you don't hear it enough, thank you. It literally is like what I look forward to every year. Like, we're planning on taking a whole weekend next year. So
I'd love to hear it. It's we appreciate the kind words, and we thank yourself and everybody out there that comes and joins us, because I mean we can't function if people aren't there.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just awesome to see people come together, making new friends, and just growing the sport in a fun way. And hopefully we can keep that rocking for a long time to come.
Hey, if it's still around when I'm 70, I will be taking my hub around up those mountains. I'll tell you that right now.
I hope I'm around when you're 70.
Awesome, brother. Well, thank you for coming on. Dude, we'll have to do this again. Talk more.
Please, anytime. Let's do it.
Awesome, man. Well, guys, remember, Christ is King. So go read your Bible and go shoot your bow.
Amen.